You're tuned to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We now present a rebroadcast of Discovering Intelligent Design with Tim Murnan.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tim Murnan, and I am your host for this new Radio Maria program entitled Discovering Intelligent Design. We will be on the air between 6 and 7 on the East Coast throughout the summer. This is the sixth show in this series, and tonight we have a special guest, Father Michael Shabarek, who I will introduce to you in just a moment. Almost every show will have a guest who is an expert in the science, theology, or philosophy of intelligent design. And remember that the show can be podcast, can be downloaded from the Radio Maria website by going to radiomaria.us, finding the programs menu, then finding Discovering Intelligent Design, and you'll find all the programs in this series. So again, this is episode number 6 of a radio show called Discovering Intelligent Design. This episode is titled The History of Evolution in the Catholic Church. On Radio Maria's website, you'll find a short description of the objectives of this new intelligent design program, and it's always a good way to get started. It says, evolution is a theory in crisis, yet Darwinists insist that evolution is random and unguided, with no need for a God. Intelligent design theory contradicts that key doctrine of atheism and leads us back to the God who revealed himself in the book of Genesis. Now, over these weeks, we've discussed the science of intelligent design with Dr. Michael Behe from Lehigh University and Dr. Douglas Axe from the Biologic Institute. We've talked scientific discovery in recent years and the fact that virtually every new discovery is, or at least I consider to be, a nail in the coffin for the viability of at least the Darwinian mechanism for evolution. We've talked about the problem of ambiguous catechesis on Adam and Eve, and we've discussed why many Catholic philosophers seem to resist intelligent design science. This evening, I'd like to continue our discussion from a few weeks ago on catechesis by looking specifically at what the Church has said about evolution and Adam and Eve in the past. We want to see if we can find what the true official teaching of the Church on these issues is. And that brings us to our guest this evening, Father Michael Shabarek. So let me introduce Father Michael to you right now. Father is a Dominican priest from Poland. He's presently associated with the Discovery Institute, and he's the author of a book called The Church and Evolution, which is presently in Polish, and it was the topic of his doctoral thesis that he completed about a year ago. The thesis is now a book, and it's, as I said, and it's being translated into English for publication in English in the near future. Father Shabarek was ordained to the priesthood in 2007. Before receiving his PhD, he ran a Dominican school of faith in Lublin, Poland for 3 years. He received his doctorate in fundamental theology from the Catholic University of Warsaw in 2012. He's been working at the Discovery Institute for the past 10 months out in Seattle, Oregon. So, Father, thank you very much for joining us this evening. And I wonder if you'd tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you've been a priest for about 6 years. And how did you become interested in this issue of intelligent design and evolutionary thought in regards to the Catholic Church?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tim, for your introduction. Yes, I've been always kind of interested in natural sciences and theology. And since I was a child, I always asked these questions about ultimate things, like the origin of the universe and the destination, the final end of the universe, what is very, very far ahead and what is very far behind us. And as most Catholic kids, I was introduced into Genesis, the book of Genesis, by teachers of religion. And I found this story quite convincing. I mean, I have never had any problems in allowing for, in my thinking, for a special creation of different animals or plants or a human being at the end. So I considered it a history, a real, true history, which happened very, very long ago. Right. And then I learned about this very long age of the universe. And I have never had problems taking these two things together, yes? So special creation of animals or plants, and also long history of the universe. I think that it was somewhat obvious for me that God could have created different things, even if it happened in over a very, very long time. When I entered the order, I studied many different subjects in theology, in philosophy first, and of course I had to study the basis of philosophy and then all theological disciplines. But at some point I realized, and I think this Darwinian anniversary of 2009 was encouraging to get into the topic of evolution. And I asked myself, I'm a theologian, so what is my church teaching on these matters, on the origin of species, on the origin of human being? What is the church position on evolution? Mm-hmm. And I came to conclusion that it would be nice to work on this topic with more details, to write a doctorate on this matter. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that this is a huge, enormous topic, very interesting, and there is a kind of confusion which I discovered, which made me even more interested in these issues. So the question was quite practical. What should I say to people who I meet, who ask me? And that is why I asked about church teaching on these matters.
Right. Father, I've only been able to see an outline and a short summary of the book, and I'm impressed with the scope that you cover, and you and I have had some conversations about it. And I know that, you might remember that we first met at the Intelligent Design Conference at Franciscan University. I think it was December of 2011. And I know Discovery Institute's very impressed with the work that you were doing in your doctoral thesis. And I believe that they are helping you to get the book translated and published. Do I have that right? Is that correct?
Yes. My book was published in Poland. Mm-hmm. And we would love to have it in English. I think it's very valuable and important. In this discipline, specific field. Yeah.
Right. I think a number of people expect it to be a great contribution to the church, kind of a clarification of everything that's happened on these topics. For people that don't know what the Discovery Institute is, I frequently mention it on the program, and a lot of my guests are from Discovery Institute. I think probably the quickest way to describe it is it's the think tank for intelligent design and other issues, too, as well as like economic issues. But they certainly have been on the forefront of intelligent design. They have a number of fellows that have written books and have become the experts in intelligent design science and philosophy. So let's move on. In the past weeks, we've been on the program here. We've been discussing the science of intelligent design. I know you're very well versed in the science. In fact, you discuss the science in your upcoming book. Do you believe that intelligent design will get a fair hearing in the Catholic Academy? With the rapid rise of atheism, it seems to me it's a very evangelicalistic tool that the church could pick up and use. Of course, most of that would be in the science class, but it would have kind of a marriage with what's being discussed in philosophy and theology. What would be your thoughts on that?
Yes. So it's obvious that church and Catholic theology cannot be isolated from other disciplines, and in our Western culture specifically, philosophy and sciences has always played a crucial role for the development of societies, religion and culture. So we cannot avoid the questions about the origin of life, origin of species, origin of human being in science. Then we have to consider the context which we have now. And the context which church exists now is the predominance of Darwinian explanations. Yes. So, and we know that these Darwinian explanations are not satisfactory for our theology, Catholic theology, Christian classical doctrine on the origin of the universe. So we have a choice. Either we will follow this naturalistic paradigm, Darwinian paradigm, and we will try to incorporate it into our theology, and we build a kind of synthesis, Or we will try to find another way which will help us avoid to acknowledge these purely materialistic assumptions and even atheistic principles, yes. And I think that intelligent design is an alternative, is a hope, actually, for Catholic theology to build a new synthesis. And in the discussions with atheists, it's an apologetic tool, because we can argue for design. Atheists would refuse the idea of God, especially God of in Trinity, but the first step to discuss, to debate atheists or to open dialogue with atheists is to point that even in material world, even in physics or in biology, we can find design. Yes, that's the first step to open the discussion on God, future discussion on God. Of course, if we are talking strictly about theology or discussions about God, maybe intelligent design is not the first, you know, the first tool, but it gives us rational and scientific support for our belief in creation. That's right. The point. It gives us coherent.
Exactly. Right. And I think the church, I think history has shown that the church has not done too well with trying to synthesize with Darwinian evolution. Of course, the church tries to separate the evolutionism philosophy from the science of evolution, but the two get mixed up very quickly, and Catholics are very confused. So before we start talking about kind of the specifics of the history, can you summarize what the church's position is? You know, what is the official position on evolution, especially Darwinian evolution, and also the creation of Adam and original sin and the preternatural gifts? Could you just give our audience, our listeners, a quick summary of those two things, and then we can talk more detail?
Yes, so a quick summary would be that this is not an easy question. Of course, I will give some details right away, but we have to keep in mind that the variety of contemporary utterances from the Church it's not very consistent, not very clear teaching. But let me give a brief answer. So, summing up, evolution, as you said, as a kind of scientific, let's say, idea, is now somehow, at least implicitly, accepted by the Church. I don't think that we can say that Darwinian evolution is accepted by the Church. Probably many theologians would argue with me at this point, but Darwinian evolution, as it is commonly said, it is a purely materialistic process which doesn't need any God, and actually so I think that any kind of purely materialistic process which right away excludes a priori excludes God is not compatible with any Christian doctrine. So I don't think that we can say that Church accepts Darwinian evolution, but it definitely accepts the idea, or implicitly allows for the idea.
That's the critical word there. The Church allows the belief in theistic evolution, but not Darwinian.
Yes, exactly. So a kind of, for example, the idea of common ancestry is somehow, let's say, implicitly allowed by some recent documents. And when we come to the second question of creation of Adam and original sin and preternatural gifts, we have to accept that there is an objective, unchangeable doctrine on preternatural gifts and original sin. This is well-established doctrine. Even if many theologians would question this doctrine now, we are talking about Church position. So we have to confirm that the belief in original sin as a sin which was committed by first parents and was propagated through generation to all people who lived after them, it is established doctrine, and it is confirmed in virtually all documents which mention this problem. And of course, the state of grace at the beginning, the unity with God, immortality, not just spiritual, as some theologians try to interpret, but also physical immortality of first people, which was maintained by God's grace. This is an established doctrine. But the question of the origin of Adam's body, there is a kind of room for discussion whether it was derived from, as it is said, pre-existent living matter, so some lower animal, or it was created specifically by God from slime of the earth by his supernatural power. Yes.
Right.
So there are like two. This question is not set. And actually, Pius XII in Humani Generis in 1950, he left this question open. Yes, he said that Catholic scholars are allowed to.
It would be fair to say that in either case, whether Adam came from the slime of the earth or from a pre-existing animal, there was supernatural intervention involved anyway. There had to be a natural transformism that turned an animal into a man. And then, of course, the question of where Eve came from. So in either case, there's supernatural intervention.
Yeah, of course, because there is a supernatural infusion of the soul into body. So we believe that a human being is unity of body and soul. This is one substance, one nature. So, of course, if we have supernatural infusion of soul, in any case, we have supernatural transformation of any being which was pre-existent. That's true. Yeah. Of course, it always opens the question how it leads to...
Right, and science, of course, is helping us to try to understand maybe whether that exactly what could have happened there. For example, the science has found this huge gap between animals and man, and it wasn't like some primate became so close to a human that all God had to do was to infuse a soul to make it a man. Those two things happened at the same time, I think, in Catholic theology. So that I don't want to dwell on this topic, but the point is that God had to be working supernaturally at that point in time.
Yes, actually, this is what we commonly recognize in contemporary theology. But if we check what was taught. Humani Generis, 1950, we will see that all catechisms, especially the first catechism of the Church from the 16th century, and then all local catechisms, like, for example, the Boston Catechism from the 19th century, they all taught about, spoke clearly, explicitly about special creation of human body from dust of the earth, and... For example, the new catechism, as we call it, from 1992, it says that this reality is expressed in symbolic language. So Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, that the Lord God formed a man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. So the catechism says that this is a symbolic language. The question is, of course, why this... teaching was somehow modified, or whether this question is closed, or you know.
Yes.
So
okay.
There is no. I would say that this teaching is open now.
Okay. All right. So I would like to just explain before we move on about what intelligent design is, because I think you were talking about implicit acceptance of evolution in the church, and we know that the intellectuals in the church are mostly. Theistic evolutionists. They believe that evolution occurred. And intelligent design, of course, it's pure intelligent design says that, first of all, Darwin's mechanism doesn't work. It can't be true. There has to be a design. That's the only way we can explain what we see in nature and in the cells of life. There has to be a designer. So intelligent design says there's evidence for a designer there in science. And that Darwin's mechanism doesn't work. Now, intelligent design leaves open the question of common descent, as you mentioned. However, more and more intelligent design scientists are starting now to question common descent. And of course, if common descent is not true, then of course evolution itself is not true. So I just wanted to clarify that for our listeners, what intelligent design is saying and has said and might say in the future. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about the history of the church regarding evolution and the creation of Adam. And I think in your work you divide it into three periods: the period before Darwin, and then the period from Darwin up to 1950 when Humani Generis was published, and then since Humani Generis was published in 1950 up to the present day. So can you give us briefly what the church has said about the issue of evolution and the creation of Adam in those three periods? So let's start with before Darwin came on the scene in 1859.
Yes. So thank you for this question, because this is actually the most interesting part of this issue. Mm-hmm. Of course, Church was interested in the question about the origin of species and human body right from the beginning. It's not the question which arose in the early 20th century when Darwinian theory was introduced into sciences. So right from the beginning, Church fathers were speaking about a special creation of human body, not just soul, but body from the dust of the earth. And they gave two analogies. It was called analogia fidei, so that one truth of faith is explained through another. So, for example, Irenaeus, very early in the second century, he thought about special creation of human body, and he compared it to resurrection. So he said that as God will rebuild human bodies in resurrection from ashes, the same was way how he created the first human body of Adam in the beginning. So it was a literal understanding and historical understanding of this origin from clay, from dust of the earth. And another great analogy was given by Irenaeus and other church fathers about Jesus and Adam. So Jesus was formed supernaturally in Mary's womb in a virginal way, and without help of father and without any human ancestor. And the same was the creation of first Adam, without any father and through supernatural formation by God. So if Adam is, or Christ is the second Adam, according to St. Paul, so this analogy must be maintained. And Irenaeus says that, the first Adam had any parent, so the second Adam, Christ, would also have a human parent, which is heresy. So basing on this analogy, he maintained both truth, supernatural creation, supernatural birth of or formation of Jesus in Mary's womb, and supernatural formation of Adam in the beginning of human history. Mm-hmm. And then, until the 5th century, we already had two traditions of interpretation of Genesis accounts. So Genesis chapter 1 and 2 were interpreted in two traditions, Ambrosian, so from St. Ambrose, and Augustine. Augustine gave a little different interpretation than most of the saints and church doctors and church fathers. So Ambrosian tradition was saying that God created different kinds of living beings, different animals or plants over time, which Genesis describes as 6 days. And these different forms or different substances were created supernaturally by God. This means that, of course, there was no common ancestry, and that it was not a natural process. There was a supernatural divine activity, direct supernatural divine activity over this time, which we understand as 6 days. And Augustine, as we know, he had more philosophical approach to the Bible, more in Platonic tradition. And for him, this explanation, which came from Jewish tradition and was inherited by Christians, this explanation for him seemed to deny God's omnipotence or perfectness of creation. So he felt not comfortable with the idea that God created something over time, and because he thought that maybe it suggests that God was, you know, that he had to improve his creation over time. So he interpreted the Genesis account in a little different way. He said that all species, everything was created in one act in the beginning. So there was one, this first act of creation, although animals and plants were created in a kind of seminal reasons, or the, in Greek it was called logoi spermatikoi, so some kind of hidden form, not developed but involved form, and then over time through natural generation and propagation these species were revealed. So we have like two traditions which were you know, which were maintained by whole Christian writers. After Darwin, so we are now moving to the second period. After Darwin, these traditions were very vital. So we can say that the church maintained the idea of separate creation of species. And this was the reason to oppose Darwinism. And we have to be very clear that Darwinism was clearly opposed by the church from 1859, let's say, when The Origin of Species was published by Darwin, until at least 1950. All church documents, and we have a bunch of them, and I talk about them, I discuss all of them in my book, but let me give just a couple of examples. There were books by Raffaello Caverni, Italian priest, Dominican, French Dominican, Dalma Leroy, and American priest John Augustine Zahm. They were all written in the late 19th century, and they all promoted this idea that God used evolution as a secondary cause to form all species. So they allowed for this theistic evolution. And all these books were condemned, refused by the church. And even in the case of Caverni's book, in 1878, the Congregation of the Index said that with his system, Darwin destroys the basis of revelation and openly teaches pantheism and abject materialism. Thus, an indirect condemnation of Darwin is not only useful, but even necessary, together with that of Caverni, his defender and propagator among Italian youth. The point here is that congregation was conscious about Galileo affair. They discussed this, but they say that even Galileo affair is something totally different. Galileo could have been right because he didn't spoke about how things emerged. He spoke how universe works. These are different questions. The question about the origin is a different question from this how things are work now. Yes. And Darwin wanted to answer about the question to the question about the origins. So he exceeded help of natural sciences.
So Father, let me interrupt you for a second here. So the Church, of course, saw from the very beginning the danger of Darwinism on people's faith, and as you say, they clearly condemned it in the 1900s and in even the 20th century up till 1950. He was clearly on the index, so to speak. Was the Church addressing the science of Darwin directly, or was it the kind of the philosophical result of that science that they were condemning?
So I think that the problem is that the core, so the scientific idea or the scientific layer of Darwin's theory is already problematic, yes, because what Darwin said that we don't have to believe in separate acts of creation, we have to believe that natural selection working on various chance variations, random variations, can produce all biodiversity, all species of living beings, starting from, let's say, one universal common ancestor, and ending with a human being, even if it was just the body of human being, but still ending with human. So this idea was problematic for many reasons. Among them, philosophical reasons. You cannot get new nature. So, take examples. For example, a dog, a cat, a cow, horse, or ape, and eagle. These are, we can say, different natures or natural species. And how can you get new nature through accumulation of just accidental changes? Yes, these changes can change qualities. But not nature. And what's the problem? Because of course we can say this is just one philosophical system. So what's the problem? The problem is that this philosophical system is the only system which can explain Christian dogmas, you know, dogmas of Trinity, which speaks about one nature of God and three persons, or Christological dogmas about one person of Christ and two natures in Christ. And it also speaks about, for example, Eucharist is explained through, by the distinction between accidentals and substance. Yes. So the substance is changed in transubstantiation. We believe that accidentals remain, so what we perceive remains, but the substance is God's body in hidden in this bread. This was philosophical and religious problem. Yes. But this was exactly what Darwin opposed. I mean, special creation or even or any divine act over in the world. So this was problematic. This was problematic. The idea of common ancestry of human and apes was problematic. The idea of common ancestry of different species was problematic. It was also problematic to have life from not life. And this was problematic for this church apologist in science, in philosophy, in theology too. Let me give you an example of another document, even of higher rank, issued in 1909 by Pontifical Biblical Commission on historicity of Genesis chapters 1-3.
Right. Now, these quotes that you're, the Biblical Commission, that you're, these are often quoted and cited by those who are opposed to Darwin and Darwin's mechanism and trying to explain Catholic teaching in terms of evolution. I just want to explain that to our listeners. This 1909 document does have fairly high authority, right? These conclusions, as well as a lot of the documents that you discuss in your book up until 1909. They were very authoritative church teaching. And I know you're going to get into this in a minute, but after Pneumonic Generis, there's been very little authoritative discussion of these issues in the church. But go ahead.
Yes. So Pontifical Biblical Commission was established as a church magisterium agenda. So we cannot say that it was only auxiliary body like it is now. In 1971, actually, the status of this commission was changed. But the previous documents were never withdrawn. Yes, so withdrew. So actually, they are still valid documents, and I think they are perfectly compatible with our faith and what we know now from science and theology and even biblical scholarship. So this document says that in Genesis account there are some truths which must be understood historically and literally. So literal and historical sense cannot be denied, cannot be doubted, and they give five truths. But this is not a closed list, so you could add more. But they specifically give five. Among them is special creation of man, peculiaris creatio hominis, and the formation of the first woman out of the first man, formatio prima mulieris ex primo homina, which is exactly contradictory to natural or naturalistic explanation. If we have peculiaris creatio, so special creation, it cannot be natural process. Yes, that's logically incoherent. You cannot say that something is natural through the generation of nature. Yes, generation which happens in nature, and it is also specially done by God, so specifically through His supernatural act. Yes? This doesn't go together. It's not possible to reconcile evolutionary or Darwinian explanation with this document. And even Pius XII confirmed this teaching in 1941 in his address to Pontifical Academy of Science. This is a lower rank document, but he said that man could descend only from man, and that man was derived from the slime of the earth by work of God, and first woman was taken from Adam, and so on and so forth. So he confirmed all this truth, and he said also that science cannot explain the origin of human body. Yes, that's important, because if we say that science cannot explain, this means that we need theology and philosophy. And of course, science can help here, but cannot give full explanation, full answer to these issues. So, right. Taking all this period together, and one more thing, which is quite important, we didn't realize how this objection against Darwinism was explicit before the archives of the Holy Office were opened for the scholars in 1998. Yeah? So, until 1998. We knew very few about all these actions by church magisterium in the late 19th century. Now we know that the Congregation of the Index, which was not the very high rank congregation, and the document was a private document to one scholar. So it was not a public document.
So it was a communication to one scholar, and it wasn't made public at that time, but it was a very official decision of the church.
Exactly. So, yeah, of course, we have to weigh the documents. And these expressions which are used in those documents were very explicit, very strong, but they were, in private documents, it means that they were not addressed to whole church. So they were not a kind of... But a biblical commission decree was published to all church. It was a public document, yes? So... some documents were still constitute an obstacle to maintain evolutionary origin of human body. There was also this famous decree of the Synod of Cologne. So we have a local synod, but it was affirmed, recognized by the Pope himself, by Leo the 13th. So this document stated that there is no possibility to accept evolutionary origin of human body. So the decree of the Synod of Cologne, 1860, was explicitly excluding Darwinian idea, and it didn't matter whether this evolution was guided, directed by God or not. They simply say that it is not possible to derive human body from living being, from any animal through growth of biological complexity or whatever. They say that it was made from the dust of the earth or clay of the earth.
So very specifically, as you say, in 1941, Pius the 12th and 18, reaffirming the Council of Cologne in 1860, excluding the human body from evolving from an animal. And how did things then change in 1950? These are very authoritative statements of the church, as was Hermanigenerus. And what then, Hermanigenerus, of course, opened the door, but why did this exclusion of the human body why did this become acceptable thought at that time? Why weren't these authoritative statements of the church accepted as, universally true right up to the present day?
I wouldn't say that it was accepted. The discussion was opened. Pius the 12th wrote explicitly, "Research and discussions are not forbidden with regard to the doctrine of evolution, in as far as it inquires into the origin of the human body as coming from pre-existent and living matter." So what Pius XII really did, he just says that the discussion on the matter is not forbidden. And he also gave no less than four reservations. He said that it is necessary to consider and respect the arguments of both parties, so the arguments of both sides should be clearly, explicitly taken into account, The hypothesis of evolution must not be presented as a proven fact, so you cannot maintain that it is proven. Then he said also that the church decrees should always be taken into consideration. So we already know that there were many decrees which you know, stopped this thinking, and that the hypothesis of evolution must not be treated as if the revelation contains nothing that would require great moderation and caution in this matter. So we cannot say easily that Genesis account is compatible with evolutionary view. And the question is, what happened next? Yes, we know that in Humani Generis, Pius XII forbade discussion on polygenism. Yes, he said this idea cannot be discussed because it is not possible to reconcile polygenism with the doctrine on the original sin. And what happened next? After Humani Generis, this document was completely misunderstood by theologians, allowing room for discussion regarding the evolutionary origin of the human body has been seen as bold acceptance of the idea. There was no discussion about human body origin. Everybody, all theologians, simply accept I'm exaggerating, saying all, let's say vast majority of theologians simply accepted the idea of evolutionary origin of human body. Pius XII said, discuss this issue. Paul VI, the next pope, encouraged Catholic scholars to discuss contraception, yes? But he didn't mean that it is permitted. After all, after discussion, he issued the encyclical Humanae Vitae, which condemned and forbade contraception, yes? But he wanted to have this discussion to establish arguments and to clarify church teaching, so that it was not externally, you know, given, but it was, you know, there was a discussion on this issue. And I think the same way we should understand Humani Generis. This is this is an inception of discussion, an encouragement to discuss the issue. And this is what I think intelligent design proponents do. They basically discuss the idea. They show that there are many arguments against it. Yes.
Right. But now, Father, let me interrupt you. I understand the point you're making, and I want to make sure we cover some things before our time runs out. But it sounds like you are saying that after Humani Generis, as you and I know, most of the theologians and academics and intellectuals in the church were theistic evolutionists, and therefore they believe that man evolved, you know, from some lower form of animal. And it sounds like after 1950, the previous authoritative statements and teaching of the church became just an opinion. That was one opinion. We now have a different opinion, and we in the majority accept this second opinion. Would that be true? They basically rejected the authoritative statements of the church as simple opinion?
Of course, we should consider documents, church documents, as authoritative teaching. I think that we still need to see the ranks of the documents. So we know that, for example, conciliar constitutions of the council, general council of the church, has the highest rank, and some things are defined as dogmas. And I believe that the question about the human body origin is a kind of open issue. Even these theologians, which I mentioned before, these Catholic apologetists who work in the late 19th century against evolution, some of them clearly said that the evolutionary origin of human body is not contradictory to one clearly specified dogma by the Church, but is contrary to what Holy Scripture and Catholic tradition teaches, yes? So they were conscious, they knew already then that this is not the doctrine which is fully explained and put into one dogma. So the discussion, to some extent, would be possible, although they all used to say that it is contrary to Bible and Catholic tradition. Right. So I think the same way put the matters all these church pronouncements, like Pius XII and the Pontifical Biblical Commission.
Right. Let's move ahead then to present day. We know that this theistic evolution, the acceptance of this by the majority, has led to a lot of confusion in the church. For example, Adam is called a myth. Even original sin is denied. Books are being published along those lines. And there's tremendous confusion. There's the attempt to explain away a true Adam and Eve, a true original parents, and Imani Generis is kind of summarized in a way that ignores all those warnings and all those pronouncements of doctrine that can't be changed. So what does the church need to do now in this modern age? What do we need? I mean, it can be shown this has had an erosive effect. The rise of atheism is rapid. The foundation of atheism is Darwinian evolution. And the church has ignored it since 1950, basically. Can you give us your thoughts on that?
Yes, so I think that we have only two ways ahead. Only we were on a junction, and there are only two ways. It's a wide junction. And either we will follow the path where actually we are going from the 1950s. So this is a path where naturalistic claims are getting farther and farther. In the 19th century, the proposal of Darwin was that one or a couple of living beings were created by God, and he didn't spoke about human evolution in the Origin of Species in 1859. A couple of years later, in the Descent of Man and other books, he already spoke about spontaneous generation of life and of course, human being, purely natural development from apes. And, of course, Catholic scholars in the beginning of the 20th century spoke about the creation of the first life, and they said that, of course, there must have been transubstantiation with animization. So hominization, the infusion of soul, must have transformed the human body in a physical way. But after Humani Generis, this idea was totally forgotten. Of course, human body was evolved purely natural. Life itself evolved from inorganic matter. And infusion of the soul is just a kind of spark, you know, a kind of enlightenment of the last hominid. So it's not a real human soul, which has all. So the next step was to deny first parents. Yes. So after Humani Generis in the late 50s, already we didn't have a question about human origin, but the question whether there was one couple or many, because the evolution of body was already accepted. So the next step was to deny historicity of Adam and Eve. We had a huge population of hominids who evolved to population of humans. And what is today's claim that even mind is a
Father, was this a product. Public? Was this a public denial of the first parents, of Adam and Eve being our first parents? Was this something that the church could see published and condemn, or did the church allow that speculation to continue openly?
Well, I think that at some points they are stopped. For example, as I said, the human soul origin is clearly taught.
Yeah? Right.
This is specifically created by God. So we cannot derive human soul from evolution of brain, but it is the idea which is accepted by many Catholic scholars, and unfortunately. But again, the church teaching on human soul is clear and well defined.
Okay.
And I think
It's not. Yeah, that alone is not going to solve this problem. So what's the second path? I think we understand the first path. It hasn't turned out too well. We've tried to harmonize our theology with naturalistic science, and it hasn't worked. I mean, people are leaving the faith. They're not believing the church has any authority to speak about it, about these matters. What's the second path that you mentioned?
Yeah, but let me just add one sentence, where it is heading to. I think this is heading to the idea that human being is purely naturalistic thing, denial of any mind, any supernaturality in the world.
So, exactly.
And this is where we will finally end up. But we can, if we want to follow the other way, the only way is to come back to the foundation, to the roots of the problem, and to the roots of Christian doctrine, to church fathers, to scholastic theologians, to Thomas Aquinas, who was so explicit on special creation of human body. And I think that the border, the line between Christianity and naturalism, ideological naturalism, is not at the point of infusion of the soul, but at the point whether human body was came from lower animals or was created from the dust of the earth. And in my opinion, as long as we don't come back to special creation of human body, we will never get stop naturalism in our thinking, even in our thinking, in our doctrine. I think it's perfectly compatible with real, true scientific data. Ideological interpretations of human data. Actually, any data you can fit to Darwinism, to Darwinian explanations, to common ancestry, whatever you find in nature, you can always say that this has common ancestry because everything is in some way is similar to anything else. Yes. So we always can say that it has common ancestry, but there is no real proof. This is like circular reasoning. You assume what you want to prove. So after all, at the end of the day, we have to come back to a special creation of human body, and this will stop naturalism, because we will say that there was at least this one supernatural act in natural history of the world where God acted.
Now the church. So your solution is to declare the special creation of the human body, and science would more or less support that. Certainly, the authority of the church for 2,000 years or 1,950 years would support that. How would the church go about doing that? Would it be through an encyclical? Would it be from some statements of the Pope setting up a commission to study it somehow open up the dialogue on the issue so it becomes a legitimately discussed option for Catholics so they see that the Church does understand where science is, does understand where the theology has always been, does understand how important these issues are to the foundation of Christianity. How is the Church going to communicate this?
Well, I think the first step is to open the real discussion. Yes, what was the desire of Pius XII was never accomplished, actually. I think that we don't have real discussion on this issue. Let's allow intelligent design proponents. I think many of them would not agree with me on theological matters, yes? So probably many of them would not support my theological idea of special creation, but that's not the point. We need a discussion on scientific level, on a philosophical level, and on theological level. I'm a theologian, so I propose theological explanation, theological doctrine. Let's start in the church and real discussion where both sides, as Pius XII said, both sides, both arguments, what should be present. Yes, but when we look at the conferences organized by even Catholic institutions, yes, we don't see both sides there because intelligent design is dismissed as, he said, it's not science, so let's not allow them. Okay, but I would say, whether it's science or not, they have arguments. And we are not just scientists. We are philosophers. If you consider it theology or philosophy, let them be theologians at our conferences, yes? That's not the point. I agree that intelligent design is a scientific idea, and I see it as a science. But I don't think that when somebody says it's not science, this means that I should not pay any attention to it. The question is, what are their arguments? You cannot dismiss this idea because this is not science, especially in the church, because church is concerned not only about scientific issues. Actually, it is she is much more concerned about theological and philosophical issues. I think we should have a very, very broad dialogue where scientists should discuss arguments pro and contra Darwinian evolution. Philosophers should discuss the idea of common ancestry, whether it is philosophically possible, and what is actually the philosophy behind the Darwinian theory, because it's not true that it has no philosophical or metaphysical implications. I think that Darwinian's idea actually destroy classical metaphysics, which is indispensable for Catholicism to explain our dogmas. So we end up with fideism, with pure fideism, because if we assume, if we allow Darwinian explanations, after all, we don't have any rational explanation to dogma.
Exactly.
And we also need a theological discussion. This is a very strongly supported idea of special creation of human body by church fathers, by medieval theologians, by Augustine, by Thomas Aquinas. Right. So why shouldn't we discuss this? Yes.
Right. Now, this is going to be very difficult, as you know. You know what happened to when Cardinal Schoenborn wrote his letter in 2005 to New York Times talking about design and nature, etc. And tremendous kickback in the, he took tremendous abuse by theologians in the church, by people with credibility in the church, I should say. So it's going to be difficult. And I think one of the ways they have to start this is by reaffirming Adam and Eve and the preternatural gifts and original sin by two original parents who, from whom we all descended. These are doctrines of the church. They should not be allowed to be distorted in Catholic settings and in Catholic schools. And if we reaffirm that, then wouldn't that force the discussion, how can that be true, and force the discussion of these other things that you were just talking about, the science, the philosophy, and the theology. And we try to get back on track here, get back on solid ground, and maybe win back some souls that have been lost over the timidity of the church in these last 60 years, and the advance of science, and the boldness of atheism and Darwinian evolutionists. I think, Father, we have to end on that note, unless you have a final comment. I wanted to talk about some other things, but we've run out of time. This was a great, I think, expose of the issues. I look forward, very much look forward to reading your book, and recommend it to our listeners, because I think you lay all this out in an excellent way, and showing the history and the issues and what needs to be addressed inside the church to straighten out this problem, basically, this problem of heterodox theology and catechesis. So thank you so much for joining us, Father, and I know you're headed out to Poland very soon, and then hope to be back in the United States in the fall. But God bless your work, and thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Thank you, Father. Thank you. I would like to say a few final words to our audience. I seem to be getting some feedback, but the theme of our next week, our seventh episode will be next week, and it will be the episode title is Human Origins and the Fossil Record. And our guest is going to be Casey Luskin from the Discovery Institute, who has written extensively on that issue, Human Origins and the Fossil Record. I know you're going to find that very fascinating, and that'll lead us into discussions about the science of Adam and Eve thereafter. So God bless everyone. Have a good evening, and may God guide you in your search for truth.
You are tuned to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. The program you just heard was a rebroadcast of Discovering Intelligent Design with Tim Murnan.